This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to the Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. We've got the breakfast grill happening in half an hour. Noel, what's happening today?
Lin Mark will be speaking with Junior Cho, the CEO of Zurich General Insurance Malaysia. They will be discussing, I think, on how COVID-19 has affected the insurance business and how Zurich has responded to the crisis and how it is rethinking its business.
We're also asking you a question over on Twitter. Should there be a deadline for vaccine registrations? Tell us why if you've answered on the poll. Right now, 27% say yes, 55% say no, 2.4% say not sure, and 16% say it doesn't matter. It looks like the no percentage is falling here. Let us know what you think over on Twitter. Right now, though, we're taking a look at the semiconductor industry because there's been much talk about the shortage that is being faced, and manufacturers across the different sectors are lamenting the fact that they are facing this shortage because semiconductors have become a vital component in many products.
Yeah, so the most recent alarm bell came from Samsung, one of the biggest makers of chips, but also the second largest buyer of chips after Apple. So the Samsung co-chief executive, Ko Dong-jin, a week ago said that there is a serious imbalance in the semiconductor industry. And I think governments and companies have expressed concerns that the shortfalls in the market might slow pandemic economic recovery. And we know, I think, was it late last year or early this year, some automakers in Europe also had to close down. So it certainly doesn't help that the semicon industry is quite concentrated in the hands of a few major players. So I guess we're looking into this topic this morning to see where the chips will fall.
To better understand the complexities of the semiconductor shortage and, as Noel so eloquently put it, where the chips will fall, we speak to Nick Morrow, lead for global trade at the Economist Intelligence Unit, more commonly known as the EIU. Nick, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Could you quickly tell us what's causing the global semiconductor shortage?
Yeah, well, a lot of this ties back to the disruptions that we saw last year as part of the pandemic. When we all started working from home, there was a surge in demand for electronics. So I think computers, entertainment goods, things like that, which really diverted a lot of production, particularly not just for finished goods, so like phones or TVs, but also chips, the components that go into those consumer products. And that's been sustained since last year because we're still in many parts of the world working from home. Now that relates to other industries because all of that demand has been really concentrated in electronics, but chips are everywhere, including in cars, which is where we've seen a lot of this impact really gather steam. But because the chip makers really derive most of the revenue from electronics, non-electronic sectors have been deprioritized, and that includes automobiles. And as a result, that's really the main reason why we're struggling with this shortage today.
Would this crisis have been avoided if the pandemic hadn't struck, or was this a time bomb waiting to explode?
I think the pandemic was very much a shock that obviously no one was able to predict. And the disruptions were just really severe and long lasting. And think about this time last year, no one really knew when we were going to recover from the pandemic and when consumer demand was going to rebound. And this comes back to the automakers. A lot of car makers thought that, you know, consumer demand for cars was going to be pretty weak for the foreseeable future, but then that consumer demand came back much more quickly than anticipated, and as a result, now we have that supply crunch. So I think that we were generally operating on this relatively fragile model to begin with. Chip making is very much concentrated among a very specialized, kind of relatively small group of companies, and so there was always a vulnerability there. And so I guess the question could have been, if it wasn't the pandemic shock, it could have been something else. And I think that is now prompting a bit of a rethink in terms of how companies, as well as governments, are looking at the structure of the chipmaking industry, as well as how that chipmaking industry is spread across different markets.
Nick, could you talk to us about the fragmented supply chain when it comes to chips? How complex is the manufacturing process?
Yeah, that's a good question. Generally, when we look at chips, we have different segments. You have some companies that are involved in the design of chips, others that are involved in the actual manufacturing of chips, others that are involved in the actual testing and packaging and assembly of chips. And so it's very rarely one company that's doing all of that. It's very much a segmented process. But like we mentioned before, there are really just a few companies that dominate certain parts of this production. And so when we see one interruption in one area, it can really have consequences for what we call the downstream supply chain. I guess one way to visualize this might be looking at the big Taiwanese chip manufacturer, TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. They provide chips for the auto sector, but most of their revenue is actually derived from electronics. So think phones, laptops, things like that. I think it's only about 3% of the revenues come from auto chips. And so right now, when we're still seeing a ton of demand for consumer electronics, TSMC has an incentive to continue producing specifically for those consumer electronics. You know, that 3% of its revenues tied to auto isn't very attractive in terms of enhancing its production there. I think that's a nice illustration that it comes down to corporate strategy and incentives in terms of how companies might be able to face these this shortage and how we might see this shortage develop over the next couple of months.
So like you mentioned, semicon manufacturing has so far been concentrated within the hands of a few players like TSMC. What caused this monopoly and what's the likelihood of more players emerging like in the US and China?
I think that's a really fascinating question. And it comes into very much the history, not just of semiconductors, but also kind of Asia and how Asian economies have developed over the past 20, 30, 40 years. We used to have, you know, back 30, 40 years ago, a ton of chip making manufacturing prowess around the world, but it's steadily been really concentrated in Asia. And that's owing to a number of factors. One is industrial consolidation. So the most successful chip manufacturers were just able to buy up their less successful rivals. Other reasons are industrial policy in Asia. So for example, Taiwan and South Korea have done a lot to attract semiconductor firms to move into their markets and essentially to move away from the US and the EU. And that's led to a situation whereby particularly we have just a few companies that are kind of dominant in this space. And it's really TSMC, like I mentioned, as well as Samsung in South Korea. And if we want to look at, you know, back in the West, say Intel, for example, but it's really these big players which kind of set a lot of the tone for the industry, as well as kind of drive a lot of the activity, particularly in the most innovative sectors. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that companies can't get involved. I mentioned that the chip making process is very, very complicated, and there are different aspects of the supply chain that companies can enter into. I think a great example of that is China right now, where we're seeing a ton of interest from Chinese companies to get involved in chip making, particularly because the Chinese government is offering some really nice fiscal support, tax incentives, subsidies for companies to get involved. So it's not impossible, but it is difficult, particularly when we look into the more cutting edge parts of the industry. You need a lot of capital to compete. You need to attract the best levels of talent to compete. And for a lot of smaller players, that just isn't really feasible in terms of their resources.
So Nick, how are the US and China responding to the chip shortage? And can either side gain an upper hand in the chip war?
There is one interesting point of commonality, and it's that we're seeing essentially a rise in protectionism in both markets. For the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, China has really pushed this idea of technological self-sufficiency. That is cultivating its domestic tech sector to meet its own technology needs. China is a huge importer of foreign semiconductors, and it sees this as a huge strategic vulnerability, particularly when we look at the context of US-China tensions and the US export controls over certain advanced equipment and advanced chips to Chinese manufacturers or Chinese companies, Chinese end users. And that's a big area that China has been trying to address, particularly over the last year and a half, but has really been part of the policy framework for, again, like the last five or six years. The US is something similar. In late February, Joe Biden announced a 100-day review of critical supply chains, as well as a request for $37 billion to figure out how to essentially revitalize US production of certain critical industries, including semiconductors. And this also comes from strategic considerations, this idea that the US is reliant on imported components from a market where, you know, bilateral tensions are increasingly getting worse and worse. And so that protectionist element is something that ironically we're seeing happen in both markets. And it's not just the US and China. We're seeing this in the EU. We're seeing it in Japan, South Korea. And that's quite worrisome for the future of the industry because, like I've been alluding to, the chip making industry is very global. It depends on processes spread throughout the world, and any interruptions in these processes could have at least a very short-term impact on production. In terms of the long-term, whether China is able to kind of break out of this vulnerability, I think the prognosis is mixed. We're seeing China expand its capacity in what we'd call lower to medium end segments of the industry. So areas that are less reliant on US technological inputs. And it is conceivable that China could see some success there. But the most innovative cutting edge parts of the industry are really dominated by either US firms or firms that use US equipment, which in turn might subject them to US export restrictions, particularly when it comes to China. And so at least in the near term, we don't expect that US dominance to be shaken anytime soon.
Nick, thanks for your time this morning. That was Nick Morrow, Global Trade Lead at the EIU, otherwise known as the Economist Intelligence Unit, breaking down where the chips will fall, essentially, in this whole semiconductor shortage issue. The U.S. is still the leading in terms of the bleeding edge technology, but can China catch up?
Yeah, so quite an interesting global take. But Malaysia has been a beneficiary. Some of our companies like Unisem and Inari, who are OSATs or outsourced semicon assembly and testing companies. So they have been a beneficiary. I think the share prices have certainly done very well.
Basically, when we talk about Malaysian tech companies, we're basically talking about those companies in there. Right now, though, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, we'll be talking about the vaccine registration deadline with Azrul Mohamed Khalib of the Galen Center. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.